Okay, hi everybody. And I've gone out of order here in this work on the Letters on Occult Meditation because I had done so much of written commentary on the future schools of meditation. I think it's it was about 36 pages of text, and I think I had maybe almost 100 pages total of text and commentary. So I figured we could wait just a little while I finish the book. Of course, as you probably will realize, this is one of my favorite sections, and I think I've, within the limits of my knowledge, I've done a fairly detailed work on the commentary that is written. But sometimes people do prefer to be able to go about their business and to listen to a program on their, you know, iPods or whatever other mechanism they have so that they can hear and work at something else at the same time. Of course, you wouldn't be able to see any visuals, but maybe that's not so important. The Tibetan's words are what is important, and my own words hopefully will bring us into a condition where two types of pure reason can begin to emerge into our consciousness. One type has to do with thought, and it is the thought of the abstract mind, which sometimes the Tibetan does call pure reason. And the truer kind of pure reason is the intuitive type, found on that area of focus we call the Buddhic plane. And that will be the true and immediate straight knowledge and understanding of things. I find it just amazing how much the Tibetan gave to Alice Bailey in those months of 1920, about 100 years ago, a whole book of a foundational nature emerged. Of course, it's important to realize that they had been, in a sense, used to working with each other, but Alice Bailey's telepathic gifts or cultivations made it possible. Otherwise, I can't imagine how such a downloading, as we would call it now in these computer days, could occur. So I think that if we combine what has been written here, all of this can be found on Makara, and it can be found on YouTube also. I think if we combine the written commentary with what I may say, I'm not going to refer to the written commentary. It's very, very detailed. And I'm going to allow maybe a more spontaneous conversational approach here. But if we combine both, the written commentary and whatever may emerge here in the next, I don't know, maybe 10 programs, then we'll have at least a basis for thinking about the future schools of meditation. Interesting that they should be called schools of meditation. Obviously, there's plenty of study that goes on, but meditation, which is more along the line of the first ray when compared to study on the second and service on the third, seems to be the most important factor that will open the door to the benefits that can come from these new esoteric schools. So we'll just get into it, and I will offer you the things that come to my mind. I can't really do much else, you know. Obviously, I'm not the Tibetan, and no one we know is the Tibetan. And his knowledge of these things is profound, but we are expected to have our responses to what he has said, and maybe some of, I hope that wasn't too low, some of our responses will be helpful to each other. So the future schools of meditation, and he's beginning on this in apparently Libra of 1920, September the 26th. So we take up today another of the series of letters on occult meditation, that dealing with the future schools of meditation. So that's the very beginning. In this letter, I shall attempt somewhat. He always qualifies, you know, because he realizes that people maybe expect of him the complete revelation, and he cannot do that. As a matter of fact, maybe no one can do that for anyone else. It has to come from within one's own consciousness. In this letter, I shall attempt somewhat to show how the training and development in the other letters will be applied, and I shall deal somewhat with prophecy, pointing out what will someday be possible and present, and not what is as yet in any way approachable. You know, maybe I should have read this a little more carefully. I've been involved in trying to at least do some preparation for the new esoteric schools, but when he writes later in the rays and the initiations how far ahead they have to be, it's something which all of us can take into our consideration, because we just have not fulfilled what is required. Although he does say, you know, interestingly enough, that beginnings have been made. And on that basis, maybe we are encouraged to move ahead in long-term preparation through the training of ourselves and the training of our students as we think ahead to the greater possibilities. Always it is necessary to have a high ideals, and ever the human mind leaps forward to some appointed goal. Sorry, I had just gotten started when I was interrupted by a welcome phone call. So I hope that has not been too much of a disturbance. We've been here. Always it is necessary to have high ideals. And I'm sure we can all justify the following from our experience. And ever, the human mind leaps forward to some appointed goal. I know my mind did. When I read this material on the new esoteric schools, I was thrilled by it. The chance to really go deeply into the mysteries. And I think I underemphasized the idea that it was not yet in any way approachable. But when you read other things that the Tibetan has written, there is that sense of the possibility of preparation. And certainly to have a projected vision of what may be possible in the future. He goes on to say, if I here outline what may seem a visionary impossibility, it is but that I seek to hold up such an ideal and to give to the race an objective well worth their highest endeavor. You know, the masters think ahead. Their thought strides centuries. And, of course, with the appearance of some of these esoteric schools, it will be centuries before this becomes truly possible. I guess you could say that in my enthusiasm, I've been chastened by this fact. Nevertheless, the preparation must begin, and maybe you too will find that preparation, at least for the preparatory schools, is a possibility. And maybe something in which we should engage. I mean, in this work over the many years now, with the University of the Seven Rays and now with the Moria Federation as the sort of internet extension of that work that was done so much in person in the 80s and 90s and early 21st century. Maybe we'll find that it was worthwhile. Certainly, I think it has awakened many people to a great ideal of hierarchical influence, which they had not considered before. Now, preliminary remarks. Just a few pages here, but of course, it can take a while. Let us pause for a moment to lay down certain postulates anent the present that will, so to speak, clear the ground for the future. The value of meditation is becoming everywhere admitted. Schools for concentration and methods of mental development are commonly advertised in the daily papers, you know, papers at the time, and now over the internet. So this is definite. People are realizing that their lives are often chaotic and jumbled and reduced in value compared to what they might be, and answers are offered through meditation. Teachers have come from the East. They've attracted a wide following. And people have seen, to a certain extent, what they can do. There have been some very good teachers. And there have been some that have taken advantage of the gullible. In any case, the value of meditation is emerging. It used to be considered from the Western perspective a lazy, retreative approach. It's not that at all. It's deeply centered on reality, if it is of the proper kind. But true meditation, he says, is as yet little understood. And that, you know, the purpose of this entire book is to help us gather a better understanding of true meditation. Concentration, it's a Leonian kind of a process. Concentration, Leo, meditation, Virgo, and so forth. I've repeated it many times. Concentration is but the foundation upon which the future work is to be based. True meditation, not really deeply understood, and people engage in all kinds of practices, you know. And some of them lead somewhere, and some of them really do not. But it is the foundation. If we have a scattered mind, you know, and if our so-called points of tension are scattered all over the personality, we are rendered ineffective. At one point, he kind of gives a percentage of how much scatter there is for the average person, the average meditator. And it's quite considerable. As yet, the future structure cannot be raised due to two causes primarily. So this is a... He has told us, you know, that the atmosphere of the West is not quite ready for real occult practice, but more and more it will be so, and we will settle down into a period of quietude where these very subtle processes can be pursued without interruption, or at least the usual interruptions can be deflected. So what is the problem here? The inherent inability of mind at this juncture to attain the causal level and the consciousness of the causal level. Now, this is something that really struck me, and so often I refer to it, why we cannot really be successful in our meditation. Think of what that requires. And how will we know when we're there, you know? Will the spiritual light and spiritual love and spiritual sacrificial will they become a common kind of theme of our conscious relation to the world? I sometimes say that when you're inescapably in the presence of the virtues you have accumulated over many lives, and you are aware of virtue, strength, which does not mean that you're not aware of all those inhibitions to the expression of your virtue. You're aware of those too, but that's not a causal awareness. So that when you're in the presence of your strengths, your virtues, your accumulated qualities, and you don't deviate from that, and you use those in your daily interplay with others, then maybe we are sustaining some level of causal consciousness. And also the absence of a master in personal presence for the sake of immediacy, you know, and being able to contact, you know, there's a problem there because emergencies arise and things have to be advised. And the ability to contact the master with respect to them is very limited today. So anyway, the absence of a master in personal presence, able and equipped to teach the true scientific development, which is the aim of meditation. So, what's the story here? We're not ready, or at least at the time this was written. Our problem remember 100 years ago the Great War, they call it World War I, was over, and World War II, far worse experience in a way, had not yet occurred. So lack of causal consciousness and the absence of the master in personal presence. These made it impossible to really pursue meditation as it should be pursued. So we have, well, maybe not after reading this book. I think after reading this book, we have a much more vivid and accurate idea of what meditation is. And, you know, as I'm sitting here, having done this now for months, I'm saying, and read it again to make sure that it really sinks in, and that many important points which are liable to escape retention can be retained. The troubled condition of the world at present is sufficient barrier to any general acceptation of training and the scientific development of the vehicles. Well, this won't always be the case, and as I said, that period of quiet will supervene. It's also, you know, it's what is it in the some of the scriptural books, peace will reign for 1,000 years, you know, and Satan will be bound. Satan in this particular context representing the rebellious Martian personality and not the host of solar angels, as the term sometimes indicates. So there was plenty of trouble after World War I, and gangsterism arose in society, and there was a general chaotic release of the personality, which would, you know, the so-called roaring 20s, when an aspect of the human being is held in check, as it is through the disciplines of war, maybe the lesson will be learned. But maybe people will simply be eager to get back into the bad old ways. So these premises are laid down here as a starting point. That some individuals here and there achieve the goal. That some people do master the system of occult meditation and make the desired progress is undeniable. But they are few in number, and these numbers are inappreciable when set against the vast bulk of human beings in incarnation at this time. Remember, that's that bulk which one day will be journeying to Sirius as their next great occult educational unfoldment. But we have to be realistic, after all. What have we achieved? When you look at the condition of consciousness of so many, and times are even now very chaotic as despotism fights with democracy, we realize that that vast bulk is not yet ready to assimilate the teaching that has been given. Although, I would say, probably because of the what we can sometimes call the consciousness revolution, more are ready than when this was written. So how do these people, what do they do? You know, maybe students of esotericism and so forth, or people who are keenly dedicated to some form of service. They achieve by right of age-long effort, and because in previous lives they trod the path or neared the portal of initiation. And maybe, you know, among our associates, we can number some of those that have achieved in that way. But we have to think in larger numbers towards a bridging away from the violent Martian red, at least into the admixture with blue in terms of pigment, giving us a kind of purple. And people making the bridge into a deeper understanding of life and not adhering to concrete-minded dogma, which holds them in some kind of mental prison, some kind of imprisoned consciousness. He goes on, but even the average man of intelligence of today, the product, for instance, of Western civilization, is far from being ready for occult training. That's a stopper. You might think that the average individual could be ready for occult training. After all, they are intelligent. so they would know how to proceed. But where are their values? What do they value, and on what do they expend their intelligence? That is, what is their motive? And do they have the faith? Because oftentimes a cultivated intellect crushes out the faith of, what can we call it, simpler souls. And faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things unseen. It puts you in touch with that which is real yet presently invisible. So we need to cultivate mind in such a way that it does not expunge faith. And occult training, for instance, of the kind the Tibetan offers, goes a long way towards that. I remember in my own life, and for a long time, I just kind of considered myself, you know, with the requisite amount of mental pride, as an intellectual. And my highest values were intellectual values. And then I met somebody whose vibration resonated with a as yet latent aspect of myself. And I was able to make the bridge at a time when, for many people, consciousness was awakening. So the training of the past and so forth began to emerge, and I was not held in the prison of intellectuality. So people are held in various prisons. Maybe the moon indicates something as the prison of the soul. They're held in the prison of blind faith and dogmatism, and they're held in the prisons of a skeptical intellectuality which looks upon all of these spiritual possibilities as fantasy. Considering that the majority of personalities throughout humanity are on the sixth and third rays, we can understand the nature of those prisons. The blind faith according with the sixth ray, and the rejective intellectuality with the third ray. But with the coming of atomic energy and the proof, in a sense, that matter is energy, the old materialistic bias, even materialism in spirituality, is being exploded. And the wisdom of the East has come to the West, where it will be further cultivated. And due to the tremendous efforts of hierarchy on the inner planes, humanity is now receptive in much greater measure, though not yet successful entirely, much more receptive to the spiritual point of view. He goes on, experiments are being made now, unknown oft to the subjects themselves to see how quickly a man may be pushed through experience and a general hastening of the evolutionary process into a position where it will be safe to train him further. So, well, there is a wind at our backs, and there is, let's just say this, sorry, a pressure is being exerted unbeknownst to us. And, you know, probably many of us, since we don't know, have been subject to this pressure. What is it that drives us, you know? We feel compelled to enter a more subtle world. Maybe in earlier in life, we did not feel compelled in this way. But suddenly in society, some kind of compelling pressure emerges, and changes begin to occur within our desire nature, and we aspire and enter into areas of possible knowledge where much earlier in life, we would not have paid attention. People in many civilized countries are under supervision, even if that supervision doesn't occur quite as often as they think. It might. What was it, every 300 years sometimes, and every 1,000 years even, but now much more frequently. People in many civilized countries are under supervision, and a method of stimulation and intensification is being applied, which will bring to the knowledge of the Great Ones themselves a mass of information that may serve as a guide to their future efforts for the race. Well, are we being manipulated, or are we being offered, unbeknownst to ourselves, certain influences which give feedback to the Great Ones and give them accurate information regarding our ability to be trained more deeply in future initiatives for the race, and often inner meditative initiatives. So, you know, there is a divine plan, and the masters do proceed on the basis of fact. Right now, to show you that the so-called old devil is in charge, we're entering, or have been entering, a post-fact era, a post-truth era. Huh. And fantasy and huge exaggeration has taken over, whereas before people adhered to the facts of the situation. And fact and truth were considered of great importance. Now, by many, they still are, and maybe by the majority, they still are. But given the end of that Piscean Age, which in one sense is an age of gullibility, a lot of people are just letting their fantasy take over their consciousness, take over their mind. And their desires and their past unassimilated experiences are directing the line of their thought. They don't know where they've been. They don't know about reincarnation. They don't know about psychology. And they project from within their own benighted consciousness upon others. What is it that makes a fantasist someone who has a very loose grip on reality and is living according to distortion and lower desire? Maybe they haven't been crossing a sufficient burning ground to get rid of those tendencies, which right now are a great danger to the expression of the will of the people. But the burning ground is coming. The Piscean age is ending. The sixth ray is retiring from its present cycle and will emerge again, maybe when things are safer against its fanatical, exaggerative tendencies. And the seventh ray, which brings, among other good things, a certain sense of practicality and stability and correct manifestation of the plan onto the physical plane, now that seventh ray is emerging. So people are being tested out, maybe in the same way that parents apply a test without explaining everything to their up-and-coming children. And the feedback is accurate, and hopefully, I think, well, actually, we can count on the hierarchical response as being what Master Mori would call co-measured to the condition of the individual and of the many individuals. Especially, he goes on to say, are people in America, Australia, you know, those so-called extended colonies, spiritually speaking, India, Russia, Scotland, Greece, being dealt with. Now, what we have here is the position of the new esoteric schools. And even, you know, in India, where we don't have the Trans-Himalayan schools, we have schools that belong to the Southern Indian branch. So of all these countries mentioned, America 1, Australia 2, Russia 3, Scotland 4, Greece 5, excluding India for a moment, they are places where new esoteric schools are scheduled to appear, are slated to appear. And I think, you know, quite a number of us are who study the Bailey work are exactly from these countries. America, and we would have to include, you know, Canada here. And I think, well, eventually we'll have an emergent Brazil for sure. And we will have also Well, South America is for the sixth root race, really. But that does impend, that does go forward. Maybe starting in another 2,000 years. So, five of the places where schools appear out of the 14 are mentioned here. A few in Belgium. Belgium is not mentioned, but it's so, close to France that maybe the French school will have something to do there. Sweden, yes, because Sweden is definitely going to be one of the places for a preparatory school. And Austria is not mentioned, but okay, it is closely connected with Germany, and the both have fourth ray souls and have produced magnificent artists and musicians. Even though Germany has been referred to as that unhappy land where it will not be possible for esoteric schools to immediately emerge, although eventually every advanced or fairly advanced country will have its own esoteric schools. The countries evolve just as human beings do evolve. And human beings have to be ready for esoteric education. And certainly they're not by any means unlarge ready. And so must certain countries that are not ready yet. A few in Belgium, Sweden is another. So we have six out of the 14. And Austria are likewise under observation. And should the response be as hoped, they will form a nucleus for further expansion. So, this is what we hope and anticipate, and that was 100 years ago, so probably a lot of work has been done. I'll put it into the indigo because it's education, Sometimes I can succeed in finding the appropriate color, and sometimes I just can't. So we have a preliminary statement here. I've been a little interrupted in preparing this particular work, but I have a feeling that I should, even though it's not really an hour, still, it can be a first program. Oh, sorry here. There we go. And we then can get on next to the actual taking up of the future schools of meditation. Such an exciting prospect. Of course, those who are deeply into masonry, and masonry is being reformed now in such groups as Ancient Universal Mysteries. Once begun, I think, in the 30s under Alice Bailey's supervision, but retaken up by Keith Bailey and his associates. You can get excited about that. You can get excited about the new movements in the church, the Masonic organism and the church organism. And we can be excited about the new movements in education, the banded esoteric organisms, the schools. It is, as the Tibetan says, such a a great stimulation to think ahead toward the possible. And I almost might say the inevitable. The time equation is simply the factor to be considered. Christ knows when he can return, and certain things just can't happen until he is in visible presence again. And many of those things depend upon our own sincerity and deep commitment to the process of the regeneration of humanity along esoteric, spiritually esoteric lines. No, esotericism, of course, exists in non-spiritual lines. But with that, we have nothing to do. We have to do with spiritual occultism. That is what we pursue. And one day, and maybe it will be as soon as what Madame Blavatsky seems to demand by the end of the 21st century, that occultism, and I will call it spiritual occultism, will have won the day, or at least in the jury of the consciousness of the many. Of course, there will always be those who just aren't ready, but if there is a sufficient critical mass, then that's what we're working towards. And this great conclave coming up and the decisions that are to be made there will give those of us who incarnate again still in the 21st century loads of work to do to promote those necessary developments so that by the time technically the year 2117 is reached, we can really, really be fully into the age of Aquarius and the age of the seventh ray without the sort of hangover from Pisces and the sixth ray. They will occur again in due time. But at the moment, new energies are imminent, and we have to prepare humanity's mind, consciousness for the recognition of and receptivity to those new energies. Well, as I say, I have no idea how long this program lasted. It's going to be shorter than usual, and I'll get into the future schools of meditation when next I can, hopefully soon. For those of you who are listening historically, at a later time, the second impeachment trial is about to begin of a representative who is not representing the divine plan. So it's an important time locally now. But these larger issues that we're dealing with are still more important than these passing affairs, which will inevitably yield to a better way of life for everybody. So, yes, I will make this a short initial program, and we'll get on as soon as possible with the immediate matter now that the preliminaries have been offered. Remember, we do have to learn how to meditate, because these are future schools of meditation that we are talking about. So that's the very first requirement, and that's why I think, you know, this discussion is in this book, Letters on Occult Meditation. So we'll get this sent out to you, and lots of love and many blessings, and let us continue our engagement with the wonderful work which Master DK has presented to us for our edification and for the edification of all of humanity, for the upliftment, according, in one respect, to the law of elevation, the fifth law of the soul. Bye for now.